In the mid-1980s, a record executive and former DJ named Joe Smith saw that a lot of the big band greats were disappearing. Count Basie, Harry James. So he decided to try to start recording interviews with outstanding musical artists while they were in their prime. And from 1985 to 1987, Joe Smith sat down with many of the signature popular musical figures of the 20th century, including Ella Fitzgerald, Barbra Streisand, Jerry Garcia, Tony Bennett, Bo Diddley, Mick Jagger, Little Richard, Dick Clark, Burt Bacharach, Ruth Brown, David Bowie. The list goes on and on and on. More than 230 hours worth of conversations. Those interviews eventually appeared in a book, and the cassettes on which they were recorded sat moldering in boxes in Mr. Smith's garage until now. This week, the U.S. Library of Congress began making those interviews available online. Joe Smith joins us now from NPR West. Thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be here, Scott.
So, Studs Terkel kind of put this in your mind?
Yeah, he wrote books that appealed to me. What it was the subject he was interviewing were just talking. It wasn't broken up Q&A. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to do with these people. I'd come in, we'd have some small talk. I had a microphone on the table, tape recorder, and then we'd just start talking. You know, why did you do this? How come this happened? How did you feel? Questions like that.
I understand you had Benny Goodman all set up, and
that was an interesting story. I couldn't reach him, and there's a place in New York called Murray's Sturgeon. It's a little smoked fish place, and they were asking me there, what are you doing? I said, I'm writing a book, but I can't get started. I'm trying to get Benny Goodman. And the owner said, well, he comes in here twice a week. And so I said, set me up. We were set up for Thursday. Wednesday, Mr. Goodman unconscionably died, and that ended that interview.
Let's hear some of this extraordinary audio. We have a clip of you speaking with Bo Diddley.
They don't pay any attention to us. We are the originators of all this stuff, and nobody pays us attention. One of us died. I'm worried about when my booty kick off. Will anybody know it? Will anybody notice it? That's something to think about. Will anybody notice when Bo Diddley ceased to exist? Will anybody know a good dude is gone to rest?
That's very moving. What put him in that mood?
I don't know. We started to talk, and he complained about record companies. He never got paid the correct amount of money, and he was sounding off. And I said, but let's talk about you. What do you feel like? And that's when he got on, when am I going to cease to exist?
Mm-hmm. We should explain a bit about your career as a music executive. First, you were a DJ in Boston in the 50s, I gather.
Right, that's it.
And then you went on as an executive to sign people like that included the Grateful Dead, Van Morrison, James Taylor, and Jimi Hendrix. Another moment we want to play now. This is the great Ray Charles talking about the equally great Artie Shaw. Now, Artie Shaw, one of the signature jazz musicians of history, he had just stopped playing music in the middle of his career. But here's Ray Charles and Artie Shaw.
I love him so much, man.
He is so smart. He is so interesting.
You'll never know. I'm serious. I mean, you'll never know. I almost cried literally tears when I think of what a loss it was that he stopped playing me. I know you think I'm kind of putting you on, but I'm deadly serious. I would not say this if I didn't mean it. I'm too old. I got to be 57 years old this year. And I'm telling you the truth. Ever since I was a kid, he was the guy that I loved so much, which caused me to start playing saxophone or clarinet. Well, actually, I started playing clarinet because I wanted to play like Artie Shaw. But Artie Shaw, to me, had so much feeling in his notes. Every note, you could feel his heart. I have to tell you, man, it's like a person dying. At least if he was dead, you can say, well, if you're dead, you can't do.
Interesting P.S. on that, Scott. Mm-hmm. I got the two of them together for lunch.
Oh!
I called Artie, and I said, you know who Ray Charles is? And Artie was a very testy guy. He says, of course I know who Ray Charles is. I said, you know, he thinks you're the living end. And he says, well, I enjoy his music, too. I said, would you meet with him? And he said, well, I set it up. And Artie always made sure I set the car for him and had the right kind of wine in the car. And so I pulled them together at the Hillcrest Country Club in Los Angeles for a lunch that was like a fan club thing. They were admiring each other. It was a real kick from it.
Oh, gosh. To have been in the breadbasket at that table and just to have overheard it. You know, I've got to tell you, listening to some clips from these interviews, they're unlike anything else I've heard. Is there a secret to that? Was it just because it was you? Was it a certain time of their lives?
Well, a lot of it was because, immodestly, it was me. I knew them. They knew who I was if they didn't know me. Like Mick Jagger, got him to say that they hadn't made a good record for 10 years. Paul McCartney, who said that since Lennon died, he hadn't written a good song. Now, understand, these records were made, these interviews were done 20 years ago, 30 years ago. But we got them to be very candid.
Yeah. Anyone turn you down that you remember?
Frank Sinatra. And very oddly, I was running his record company, but he had just been assassinated in a book by a lady named Kitty Kelly, and he didn't want to do any interviews. And so I got stonewalled. And 2 years later, at a record session, Sinatra said, you still want to do that interview? I said, the book's been out for 2 years, Frank. I don't think it's going to make any difference right now.
Let me, really a very nice moment. David Bowie talking about how he almost ended up in advertising. He was in art school with Peter Frampton's father.
And some of us went straight into street jobs because we didn't really believe in ourselves as painters or artists. And I was one of those. I went into the visual side of an advertising agency, and I was doing paste-up jobs and small designs for raincoats and things like that. Awful.
Maybe
awful.
Maybe should have kept it too. You'd have owned four
shots.
Well,
if all this goes down the tubes,
you can always go.
I can get on Madison Ave there with the best of them. I think those days are over.
When you finished doing the interviews over those 2 years, did you find you came away from it with any kind of conclusions about what qualities a lot of these artists shared?
I felt if there was one emotion that went through the old ones and the new ones, it was insecurity. The next record, is that going to be a hit?
Yeah.
Are they going to continue to be stars and be idolized? Because everybody has the moment when their records are on the charts, the moment when the crowds are at the concerts, and then the moment passes, but they remain big and important, but they're not the moment anymore, and that bothers them.
Let's end on you're having tea and a chat with George Harrison. In this first clip, he talks about his life in the post-Beatles era.
How hard is it to be George Harrison? How difficult is it to...
It's getting easier all the time. It was very difficult once we got into the heavy period of the Beatles in the early 60s and through the mania. That was very difficult. Then we went through all the drug period, which scrambled our brains up. And then after the Beatles split, and historically we all know there was all the legal problems, but I'm glad to say I've come out of the other end of that tunnel, and I feel really, really good about it, and I'm a happy person in myself. All our problems are going away, so it's really quite easy now.
In your conversation with George Harrison, there was a surprising moment when he talks about his favorite version of one of their best-known songs, Something.
The best version of Something is James Brown. And it's a killer.
It is.
I even sent him a postcode saying you should put it out as the single.
Has anybody ever heard it?
I've got it on my jukebox at home, but, you know, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
The whole idea of George Harrison sending a postcard to James Brown.
Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover.
Well, Mr. Smith, on behalf of the American people, thank you for the gift of these interviews.
I enjoyed this, and I thank you very much.
That is retired recording executive Joe Smith speaking with us from NPR West, and his conversations with musical greats are now online from the Library of Congress.
I got to believe in something.
And you can hear more of Joe Smith's conversations on our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Something in a style.